listening to the Barcode Podcast with your host, Chris Glandon, serving cybersecurity straight up with no chaser. Let's hit the bar and grab a drink.
Hey, what's up, Tony? Hey, I know that sinister look in your eye. What are you pouring up right now?
Well, Chris, we call it identity gone. I just came up with it. You basically just add a bunch of random ingredients from drinks you find on the counter. Then you sell it to whoever comes in first.
Yo, Tony, I want another drink, dude. I looked right on the counter and now it's gone. What's your policy on stolen drinks here?
Wait, what? Your drink was stolen?
Yeah, and so was my identity.
Wait, for real?
Okay, just relax. Who stole your identity?
I have no idea. I just woke up and it was gone.
Well, where did you see it last?
I used it to make my drink for some reason, and now it's gone.
Jeez. Here, just fill out this form, would you?
Form says I need to produce ID.
Yeah, well, we need it to properly report your identity crime to the authorities.
How the hell am I going to produce ID if it's already been stolen?
Sorry, hon. I don't make the rules. I just enforce them.
This is not fair.
Listen, you could be anyone. Without ID, I have no way of processing you.
They stole everything from me, though. I'm just a ghost.
I think you've been drinking too much. You should probably leave now.
You know what, dude? You guys already don't sell this, and I'm not going anywhere until I get my identity back. This is enough. Hey,
ma'am, calm down. If you don't, you're going to have to leave the bar, and I'm calling the police. Without your ID, you're going to be in some serious trouble.
But what about my identity thief?
Oh, don't worry. They have ID. I'll serve him. Now get out.
I'm taking my life back, and there's not a damn thing you can do about it.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
911, what's your emergency?
Hello, police? Look, I need an officer here. Somebody's stealing ID all over my bar.
Damn, Tony. Give me a drink stat, and no identity gone, please. I got a guy I'm about to meet up with who's an expert on identity theft protection.
Yeah, I got you, man. I'll actually make one that's legit. We'll call it the Cyclone. It's not quite a carbon copy of the margarita, but it's close. We're going to add 1 ounce of Contro, 2 ounces of tequila, 1/2 ounce of fresh lime juice, throw all that into a shaker with ice. Shake it, strain it over fresh ice in a highball glass. Then you're going to top all that with some orange-flavored sparkling water. I'm going to garnish it with a lime twist. Enjoy. Oh, shit. I gotta run, Chris. I'll see you next round.
Iran Sinai is the CEO of IDSEAL, an organization that provides proven identity theft protection, data privacy, and cybersecurity solutions. Iran prides himself on being one of America's forerunners in consumer advocacy and protection. For more than 25 years, he has dedicated his life to safeguarding people and their reputations while actively working to raise public awareness about identity theft, privacy, scams, and fraud. Iran, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to this conversation. And I'd like to start things off by just talking to you a little bit about your background and your experience. You actually played professional soccer at one point. Is that correct?
Yes, I did. When I was young and beautiful, I did. Now I'm only beautiful. But yeah, I did play soccer growing up in Israel. Played through college on scholarship here in the U.S. And yeah, it's one of those things that you grow up with and you never let go, even at this age. Unfortunately, it comes with a lot of injuries when you get older. But, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Love the sport.
I know all about it.
Yes, for sure.
Was that ever a focal point for you to extend your career in soccer? Or I guess when did that transition sort of occur for you when you decided to go more towards the security side?
Well, I guess growing up in Israel, playing soccer, and then after the military and going through what I went through, coming to the States, being on soccer scholarship, and continuing from there, it came to a point that I started school here, college in the U.S. when I was older. older than any other person, because I started here when I was 24, right? Because in Israel, you go to the military, and what I've been through, it delayed my coming back to the States, or coming back to soccer, rather. And when I eventually got to the States, during my undergrad when I was 24, I was on soccer scholarship in New York. And the funny thing is, when I used to go on the field as a 24 years old playing with freshmen, players used to come to me and say, "Coach, are you playing?" I was like, "Coach, I'm 24 years old. I'm a freshman here. What are you talking about?" So being that, and being that I graduated when I was 28 and then continued my schooling, when I went pro, I was older in age. And back at the time, you know, you had to have a job to play soccer, right? It didn't cover, especially because maybe I wasn't in such a high level that made enough money, right? But nonetheless,
especially here, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
I'm sure there was a difference.
Exactly. Yeah. And nonetheless, the experience was incredible. And I started getting injuries. I've had injuries before that during the military time, and continuing to play soccer, it got more and more intense. And I realized that what the body goes through is just a lot. And as much as I love the sport, I figured that I'm going to need to do something else. And I had other passions as well. I was very kind of diverse in what I was doing, and continuing my schooling, eventually going to PhD. But nonetheless, that's when I kind of figured that I need some direction in life. And the soccer was for fun. It wasn't a focal point of my life, but it was definitely something I don't regret doing.
And what was your focus on while you were in school here?
I started, believe it or not, I started in accounting, and okay. I really don't like accounting, but I started with accounting. And growing up, I always told my dad, "I want to be a CPA." He said, "CPA, you're a salesman. What are you talking about?" Right? And I said, "Yeah, Dad, what do you know?" So I did accounting, really didn't like it. Then went to master's in accounting, really didn't like that either, with international law, and then continued to PhD with law. But I never really practiced. I'm not a licensed attorney. So I must say that, because saying you're a licensed attorney, you said that could be serious. So I'm not a licensed attorney, and I don't practice because I'm not an attorney, right? But back at the time when I came to the States, I was working for the government of Israel, Ministry of Defense, working with the American government. And
and we must say, when you came to the U.S., because that is significant.
Very much so. It became very significant for you guys, because I came here to the U.S., landed in New York on July 4th, 1988 at 6 a.m., and it became a national holiday, as we've discussed before, right?
Yes, so, thank you for that.
Of course. So after working for the government, I did do a little bit turn. Because I did, believe it or not, after that, ended up working in the garment industries. I was working for a company called Tahari. It's a women's designer, a very big company. I was VP of production and operations, and very big company. And the owner was Israeli, and we, of course, met where else but on the soccer field. And he was playing for fun. I was playing for fun indoor. And then he asked me if I want to come to work there. Because he liked how I played soccer, I guess.
And this was still in while you were living in New York.
That's why I was living in New York, just about to finish my contract with the government. So I came to the office, said, "Do you want to come work for me?" I said, "Sure." I gave me the number of the CEO. It was probably $500 million company or whatever it was. Went to the CEO. He said, "So you play soccer with Ellie?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, how much do you want to make and when do you want to start?" Right?
Nice.
I didn't take it. I was still working. I had one more. I told him, "Look, I have one more semester to graduate." And I was on the government visa at the time, diplomatic visa. And I said, "Let me graduate first and then I'll come back." Anyway, from here to there, ended up working there for a few years, tried one more time after I left Tahari to a company called Gloria Vanderbilt Jeans. I was their VP of operations and production, and I realized the garment is not for me. And that's when I went back. And fast forward, here we are, 20 years later, I'm still in the cyber arena.
Very nice. So there was a transition there when you left New York.
Yes.
And you moved to San Diego, correct?
Yes.
What triggered that move at that time?
You know, first of all, living in Manhattan for 18 years takes a toll on you. I'm a hot weather kind of a guy, right? Give me the heat, give me sweat. I'd rather do that than being cold. And in New York, it was kind of every year, it was like, okay, this is the last winter. This is the last winter, right? And eventually,
never,
I said, okay.
Never the last one.
That, yeah, exactly. Until one time it was. Removed in 06. And went there to explore, again, opportunities with, again, the arena, the cyber security arena.
Okay.
And that started. And then back in 08, I had a kidney transplant. I underwent a kidney transplant in February of 2008. And my wife, my ex-wife, my wife at the time, which we still talk and, you know, everything is great, was my donor. What happened is a year later, we went to try buy her a car. And when I remember sitting at the dealership, and I remember the lady Lindsay from the dealership who I knew there saying, but Iran, I can't pull Maria's credit. And I said, why not? And said, well, according to the bureaus, she's deceased. And I remember we were looking at each other. I was like, what are you talking about? And apparently someone possibly stole her medical information, used it to get prescription drugs, to get treatments, whatever they did at the time. And basically, once I started getting the copays, they wrote on the bills deceased and sent it back. So we literally have had to go to Social Security with proof and got a note at the time that's called Alive and Well. Right, that you can't even get today, because today there are so many imposters trying to steal deceased people's identity, believe it or not. So that when you go there, they say, well, they'll say, Chris, how would I know that you are the real Chris and not someone who's trying to be Chris who is really not Chris, right? So from here to there, we are able to bring her back to life, clear her credit, and bring her to back to life. But that was the pivotal point, I think, in my life. After a while, I swore that if I could do something to help people not go through what we went through, that'd be my gift, right? That I can leave behind me. And lucky her, well, lucky me first, right? That she was there for me, but lucky her that I knew what I was doing, because I was familiar with the field. And even though it still took months and headaches and, you know, sleepless night thinking what's happening here. So yeah, that's when I first dabbled in the really going towards helping people protect and, you know, recover their identity when things happen.
Yeah. And it's fantastic what you're doing. I do want to mention that you once had a show on ESPN Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And on that program, you spoke with SMBs, you spoke with small business owners. Did that in some way, you know, help you gain a perspective on identity fraud and the potential risks involved from the business side?
I think being in the arena of identity theft and how it affects your life, and when it happens to you, obviously, and when it happened to me, obviously, it was an eye-opener that mm-hmm. now you're not only talking the talk, but you're walking the walk, right? Yes. And yeah, I'm probably one of the only CEOs of that runs companies that actually know how to take a case from A to Z and literally resolve it, right? Resolve the whole case and knowing that if you are a client of mine or a subscriber of ours, I can tell my people what to do. And I remember when we set up all the call center, I used to walk around and train people and listen to what they say and how they say and be a part of the conversation. But then throughout talking, having the radio show, started on KCBQ and then ended up on ESPN radio in San Diego, it was a really an experience and an opportunity more to reach out to what we used to call the small business owners corner, right? And my show was really bringing guests from the community, whether it's realtor, financial people, or we had the district attorney of San Diego come often to talk to us about certain things like cyberbullying and other things that are happening, or even trading with, you know, people are being, women are being kidnapped in San Diego and brought over the border, you know, all kinds of crazy topics. And the CISO, the Chief Information Security Officer of the City of San Diego, would come off the show, and I'll give you an example. He would say, well, you know, we get in the morning and we get the, what's called the Palo Alto report, and we'll see about 60,000 attempts a night to hack into the systems, right? People hack into police cars, computers, for example, because mm-hmm. he said when they drive behind you trying to get your information, then they can't because the computer's too slow. Or he said, you know, a funny thing, he said, in San Diego, we change all the meters, you know, when you car parking meters, from coins to credit cards. And we thought it's going to save labor and it's going to be such a great thing. Ended up it's costing us more because now we have to protect the data of all those credit cards. And the labor for that is much more expensive than those guys that walk around with those cards that they pull for the quarters. Pool, right? So it gave me an opportunity to really look into the community and see what people need and to hear real stories, real nightmares. And that's what pushed the topic even more.
So when the event happened then with you and your ex-wife at the car dealership, you were more cognizant at that time of what was actually occurring.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because now you're not, you know, and I'm not just sitting and talking to you about, you know, that could happen to you. You know, I've heard of medical identity theft and it's horrible. No, I can tell you how it's, what's horrible about it. I've been there, done that, mm-hmm. right? So that gives you a real perspective. You know, it's always that you experience something, unfortunately, you learn from it and you can speak on it firsthand, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So with that experience and with your situation specifically, talk me through that. How long did it take you from when you determined your ex-wife was a victim of identity theft to the point that the ID restoration process completed?
I think it took over 6 months. The good thing, I mean, there's nothing good about it, but the good thing that was done, there was a medical identity theft. Compared when someone steals your social security, right? Even though they had it, but back at the time, remember, it wasn't like today. Yes, there was identity theft, but the awareness to it was not as great as it is today. And it was still kind of the beginning of the big thing, which the trend that we're seeing today. I mean, talking about $50 billion lost from cyber crimes and stuff in last year, right? So when you're looking at that, for example, I just interviewed, we talked about it briefly before, someone I know who had some coverage, obviously wasn't good enough, and it happened 6 months ago, still going through a nightmare. It turned up to even threats again on text because he found who the thieves were trying to connect, and he was really powerless of what he can do. And those guys left town, and there's nothing can be done to arrest them. And who knows if they're going to do it for other people. But the worst thing, the reason I'm getting to it, is that they have his social, and the whole purpose was getting his social, right? Even though they're not that sophisticated, they know enough to harm. And we're talking about drug users and people that are real criminals doing that stuff. And when someone has your social, what stops them from coming back in 6 months or a year or 2 years down the road and wake up again? It's like, ooh, let me try X's social. Maybe I can get something going now. Maybe he's a little bit complacent now and he's not paying attention. And that's what I'm trying to educate. What happened to us, yes, it was horrible. Lucky us that the thief was not that sophisticated, but they stole it, the medical identity, used it for drugs and whatever, and they were gone. Right? Had people, you know, realized that once your social security is out there, that's where the problems begin. And people say, I'm not worried about it because I have bad credit. It's not about your credit. I mean, imagine here's a scenario that I'm like, oh my God, I'm so lucky, right? Imagine they steal your medical identity, they use it, and now they change your blood type because they change your medication or your allergies are not gone. And now, let's say my ex-wife had to give me the kidney and it happened before. Now, so well, you're not a blood match. Or what if there are allergies? Or what if you need to get treatment and they give you the wrong thing because of what's on your records?
Yeah.
That's really scary. Just as scary, even more so maybe, because it's life-threatening here when someone steals your social. But they can really ruin your life. And that's why, you know, when I start talking about it, I kind of like, oh, let me get off my jacket because I'm starting to sweat just talking about it because I get so passionate, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what else is scary is that in addition to the identity resurrection process that you live through, you can never be assured that the damage is 100% reverse, right? You never know what data was compromised, how it was used, where it was used. And today you have the dark web, right? Where people typically have knowledge of or visibility into, or know they even need visibility into. So it gets scarier by the day, man.
Yeah, it is. And you know what's the crazy thing? If you go on the dark web, you can buy stolen credit cards. And I'm saying it's only credit cards. I mean, you can buy more than that. But you can buy stolen credit cards with a guarantee that if they don't work, you get your money back.
Wow.
Can you believe that? And I mean, you can get packages. And believe it or not, research that we've done and data we received, medical information sells more times and it's more expensive than financial information. We've just launched something relatively new, added that to our kind of features, medical identity monitoring, right? So basically, it works just like monitoring your credit. Whenever, if you enter your medical ID cards or the numbers on them, on the cards that you have, anytime you use your medical, your insurance card, you get an alert. Just like credit, right? So you know that if it's not you, you know what's going on here. Someone is using my card, right?
Right.
Which is incredible. Which is incredible. And you know, stuff like that. Lucky me, we didn't experience anyone stealing money from the bank account. Unlike my friend that was, you know, you can find those interviews on our YouTubes and stuff like that. But the guy had over $260,000 gone from his bank account in a second, right? And he had loans and student loans, and you'd think, how could people get student loans and steal your identity and get a student loan, right? Here's the trick. You don't have to attend classes. You get a student loan, you register to classes, you get the money, and then you never attend classes. And I don't mean to teach you how to steal it, but you know, that's what's insane about it. That's where, you know, we are not aware of how much damage can be caused to us with medical, with just regular fraud. And it's not about people say, yeah, my bank will cover my credit card. It's not about that. It's about ruining your life. It's about ruining your reputation. It's about, what about your kids? What if someone, by the time they're ready to college, you'll find out that they have a whole rap sheet with the repoed car and credit cards, and we see it all the time.
Yeah, and you can't put a dollar amount on that pain. Right?
Exactly.
And then you have to worry about the reputational impact as well, right? You have a certain profile online.
Absolutely.
For instance, if you go to look for work and an HR company is performing recon on you and, you know, looks at this profile and believes that this fake profile is you.
That's right. And that's right. And you have all kinds of fake profiles. It's not, I'm not saying we can find out if you have a fake profile out there, but there's so much that can be done, so much that can be prevented proactively and not proactively, right? So, you know, for me, the identity theft was one thing. And I remember a few years ago, we had IDCL up and running and we had identity theft programs and very happy with the features we had. And obviously we kept adding, like I said, the medical monitoring and the financial transaction monitoring, which kind of goes into, it connects to more than 15,000 institutions. And you can monitor changes in your investment accounts, 401k account, your even Venmo accounts and stuff like that, you can monitor changes into those accounts. So you are alerted. But I said to myself, and that was before COVID started, I said, you know, I kind of vision that, I don't know, maybe in my lifetime, maybe not, we're going to have those self-driving cars that people are going to live maybe outside the city, maybe not, but they're going to have a car that's going to drive itself, maybe take them to the office, then the car is going to go back home, take the wife with the kids to the store, whatever, and we'll be working on our own computer. And I figured, I said to myself, you know, the BYOD, not B, right? Not BYOB, that you can do before you met me, but the BYOD, bring your own device phenomena, is going to get more and more out there. So people are going to use their computers at home and use it and share computers. People were laughing at me when I said that. And that was probably in 2018. And little do you know, COVID hit, right? Mm-hmm. And people started working from home. All of a sudden, you leave your computer on and you're going for a break or an evening, your kids jump on your computer. All of a sudden, you're sharing your computer. All of a sudden, there's all these additional risks because you're no longer protected by your, let's say, network at the office that you have the protection. You're on a home Wi-Fi. There's so many additional risks. So I said, I need to do something. And that's when I started back at the time to help you with your own privacy and protect your own privacy on your own device. And when I started doing that, people say, whatever. And It's a huge thing now. We give it, it's included with all our plans. And what it does, it's called ID Seal Protect, right? And no one else offers that. It has 14 features. Yes, you can find some of those features with other companies, right? But you won't find all 14 of them. And even if you have to go to a few different companies, you can probably get close to half. But for me, it was important that when you leave your computer on, or when you turn your computer, you work on your computer, you have a lot of documents out there. I wanted to know that those are protected. So I'm like, how am I going to protect my documents so my kids don't see that, or they don't see my passwords, or someone hacks my computer, I forget my laptop open, or someone steals it. What if they get my latest tax return? You know, working from home, we're doing all these things while we're working, it's all on the computer. Everything, all our life is on our laptops, right? So, for example, I did something it's a document scanner. So as soon as you install that, ID Seal Protect, it scans through all the documents on your computer. And it says, hey, Chris, we found here's the list of all the sensitive documents that we think you have on your computer. You can add keywords, you can add search criterias, but then we recommend that we will encrypt it for you and put it in a vault. The vault is not on the cloud. It's hidden in the software, right? So if someone hacked your computer, stole it, jumped on it, whatever it is, they won't be able to find it. You can work on it through the vault, or you can export it, or you can delete it. There's so many things. So that was important for me. It was important for me that you don't have to sit with a sticky note on your camera when you're home. And you don't have to leave it, or what if it falls, and to worry about that. You just have something that blocks your camera and no one can hack into it because it blocks the ports to the camera. So you can speak at home when it blocks your microphone, so you don't get any pop-ups with ads based on what you said, or no one can hack into your computer. And why not give someone VPN? VPN is the thing of the future, right? We just came up with something that's called VPN Plus, right? It's launched November 1st. Because we have a campaign that's called The Game Has Changed, right? Because not only because gamers use VPN and they need to use VPN, we want to teach, starting from the younger generation, you need to use a VPN, especially when you travel, you're on the road. Imagine working in a VPN, and you know what it is. I'm just saying that for people and sake of the listeners, that imagine all your information is in a tunnel. Right, it's encrypted, it's protected. No one can get into this tunnel, and none of your information can get out of this tunnel. it protects your information. So what if I give that to you? What if I give you antivirus? What if I give you? There's so many other features. What if you can Google, work on the web and have no cookies? Or what if you can scramble all the digital profiling? What if you can work on the computer and have no ads popping up for you? Yeah. So all of those features were, I keep talking, but I told you. Don't let talk, man, because I'll take over, right? So
Nah, I like it, man. And especially the ID seal protect feature is phenomenal. And for the average user, they would be shocked to see how much personal data is unprotected on their PC. And, you know, once that information is made known to them, it just enforces awareness and enforces proper handling and storing of their data moving forward.
Yeah. That's right. And that's the key. Look, I mean, if you go to doing something in your life, that's my belief, right? If you go to do something focusing on the results, it's going to be limited, right? When I remember started IDCL or stuff like that, when I do something, I don't think focus on the results. The results are things that I can measure at the end of the process, whether they happen or not, right? Yeah, results could be a yes or no answer, right? Did I make money? Did people use it? Do people enjoy it? Is it easy to use? All those is yes and no, right? But the context, the way I'm looking at it is, why am I even doing that? And I'm doing that because, you know, because I feel that it creates a happier world. It's much bigger than me. It's much bigger than you and the company. It really just creates an amazing environment. And if people can get that, then now we're talking. Yeah. Now we're making a dent in the world, you know?
Now talk to me a little bit about who you partner with to make this happen. Do you have exclusive contracts with a certain bureau that you work with, or how does that typically work when you're looking at an individual and you're sort of building that profile for them?
So we at IDCL, we are powered by Experian, right? As you know, there are three credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, right? And I've always had, for many years, I've had a relationship with Experian to a point that we created the IDCL powered by Experian, the data. So when we get a data, when we protect your identity, we can access it, right? It's provided by Experian to you, right? So I don't look at what they give you. I don't look at your credit, for example. But we work with Experian to provide the data so we know what to protect. Right. And but, you know, the funny thing is that as much as I work with Experian, and we have a, you know, we work in 14 countries in Europe and we work in Canada with different products. But I'm one of those that, because I'm so, how do you say, impartial, though, so not one or the other, because I think I'm the only one that I actually have a relationship with all three bureaus. I don't think anyone else has the same relationship that can say, well, I work with Experian, but I can't talk to anyone else, right? I talk to all of them. I get what we need. I communicate, working on different things. And I think when you focus on something that's not just one thing, it changes how you work and what the collaboration you get from different companies in different parts of the world.
Yeah. Now that's interesting. Let me ask you this. Once someone registers and has an IDCL account, right? Talk me through the components that are included for that user. Is it possible to list out what protection IDCL is providing that user?
Okay. So when you sign up, obviously you sign up with your email. So there is a process, and I'll get back to the sign-up. There's a process that calls authentication, right? Authentication are those security questions that are generated directly from the bureaus, right? So you get a question and said, hey, Chris, between the years of 2018 and 2021, you had the car list. What was your payment? A, B, C, or D, right? Mm-hmm. Those are security questions that you're being asked by the bureaus to confirm your identity, to confirm that it's you. Those are questions that sometimes could be annoying because, oh my God, I don't remember that. But then you have another choice. So you have a few questions that are asked to authenticate your identity. As soon as you do that, that's when you can start getting credit alerts. However, the law says that as soon as you sign with your email, right, as far as we are concerned, as far as the insurance companies are concerned, you are protected. So even you didn't authenticate your account, you're already protected, right? Because you provided your email account and your email is already monitored on the dark web, right? So if your email is being sold on the dark web, we'll give you an alert. Right now, we encourage people, and we know that 99% of the people do authenticate because they want to get credit alert and they want to get all the other information. So you signed up, you create your own password, right? Then you authenticate your account, you continue with authenticating your account, and then you go in to fill in all the information. Now, you need to remember, and everyone needs to remember, that we can't monitor what you don't provide us access to, right? So if you want me to monitor your 401ks and IRAs, you better put the account numbers in so I can monitor them. You want me to monitor your passport that's not being sold on your dark web, or you want me to monitor, obviously I have your address, so you'll get alerts if there are any sex offenders that move into your neighborhood, right? And also you get alerts if someone's trying to change your address in the post office. But if you want me to monitor your Facebook account or Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter account, you're going to have to connect me to them so I can monitor them, right? You have to authenticate so I can send you immediate credit alerts if there's something happened on your credit.
And when you say social media monitoring, what does that consist of?
I'm monitoring reputation, right?
Okay.
I can't monitor, unfortunately, we have the technology, and you know, it's like, I'm going off subject for a second. I can even create, you know, to scan images if someone posts your image on the web, but I can't do that because in order to do that, I got to get permissions, for example, from Facebook and Twitter and all those apps for dating apps, mm-hmm. right? Tinder yeah. and all those. So if someone set up a fake profile, I can get that, but the companies won't let me access. I need collaboration to make things happen. It's not a one-side thing. I'm not hacking into anything. I need collaboration. If you want me to protect your information, allow me to monitor it. Same thing. If I want to protect more than that, I need collaboration from the social media accounts, so social media companies. And I won't do that. So what I can do is monitor, for example, if there's any bad words used there, or when we do children's social media monitoring, if there's cyberbullying, right, the parent would know, right?
Interesting.
And we find out that 90% of the kids are going through any cyberbullying will not confront their parents about that. So you as a parent would be able to know that, right? So that's what I'm talking about, social media monitoring.
And I noticed that you provide detection of oversharing of information as well. And I mean, the correlation that an attacker could do just from the data that a user posts or a picture that they post of themselves when they're on vacation, that threat is real. And it's dangerous to post information haphazardly like that.
Yeah, I mean, we can do it. But again, I won't be able to do it if the social media platform give me access to that.
Right.
So, and here's the thing, you have a great point, right? Because here's what people do. You go to a vacation with your spouse and your in-laws and your dog for your birthday, right? So now you're posting where you are, any geographical location of where you are. What's your favorite vacation? What's the name of your dog? And what's your wife's maiden name, right? Now, you can see that because you tagged the entire family in there with your dog, Schnoozle, whatever, right? So basically,
your guard dog's not home.
Yeah, exactly, right? So now I know a lot of the things,
mm-hmm.
you know? So That's kind of something we try to educate people. I know people feel the need to share a lot, but just think about it a little bit. I mean, how many times we see people post on Facebook and said, hey, if you got a friend request from me or whatever, it wasn't me. How do you think that happened?
Yeah. Yeah, I see that far too often.
Exactly. So,
and if you're a target, that's light work, right? That's easy for someone to correlate that information, or you may not be a target until you post that information.
That's right. And you know, I always say to people, look, can you prevent identity theft? Nah, absolutely. Look, NASA's been hacked. There's so many things been hacked today. So, can I guarantee you? No, I can't guarantee you. But you do have the insurance. But also, look, if I'm a thief, I'm trying to get into your house and you have an alarm system and your doors are locked properly, I might not waste my time and go to the next victim. Might be a little easier. It works the same with identity theft, man. It works the same way. You just have to be a little bit more, take an extra step, do two-step authentication on everything you have. Come on, don't be lazy. I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying in general. I see people and I said, do you have two-step authentication? It's like, no, what's that? So I'm saying, no, it's a pain, you know? Like, come on. What's a pain? A pain that your information is stolen and a pain to take another 5 seconds to get a text onto your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in our field, we almost assume they have it. But there's so many times where you're talking to folks outside of security or not in that security lane that don't use it. It's an inconvenience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk to people that travel all the time and they're like, no, a VPN is a pain in, you know what, man, I don't want to use it. It's like, come on, forget it. It's like, you serious?
Yeah.
You know, it's, what does it take?
Until they get hit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then it's a bit too late, you know? And I think it's about awareness, and I'm you know, happy to be here because hopefully the listeners can learn a lesson and can start looking a little bit back and say, surely you have a VPN, you're using a VPN, right? If you're a student or whatever, you know. So it's important. It really is important.
Absolutely. I am a user of IDCL, and I just would like to talk through my personal experience a little bit. And I don't want to hijack the episode here, but I think it's important.
No, man, as long as you do a good job, keep talking.
It's all positive. No, I mean, we talked about the registration and setup, which was seamless in my case. You know, the validation piece was straightforward. You know, I was up and running probably within 5 minutes or less. The UI to me was super intuitive. I think that is super important as well. I mean, even with me being on the security side, when I'm navigating a product that I'm using, you know, that's important for me to be able to easily navigate through a system and find the information that I'm looking for and have it displayed, you know, properly. And I love that aspect of IDCL.
Appreciate that.
You know, the information that I saw was a result of incidents that I never even knew happened. So, you know, having that intel, I think is extremely important. And if I were to have that visibility in real time when those events occurred, you know, it would have been extremely valuable to me.
Yeah.
And then lastly, I do want to shout out Digital Spy, which is the dark web scanner. And it's because, you know, not too many of us have intel and visibility into that platform. And, you know, that's where you have the dark web marketplaces and they're just selling a wide array of personal data. And I just thinking having that monitoring capability is just great.
Yeah. You know, the dark web, it is a fascinating place, right? And it's kind of everyone selling everything from everyone else. Kind of imagine a farmer's market you go to and you see all these carts, right? So imagine they're all selling this stolen information, but then they steal from each other to sell it too.
Yeah.
But it's insane, man. It's absolutely insane. And what you can find there and what people are selling, it is, you know, their package deal. You can buy a package deal of your your driving license, your email and password, and let's say your password. So there are all kinds of package deals. So it's a thriving market, and you know they're rating systems to different companies that hack and steal information. You know, it was once said by director of the FBI, said, you know, there are two types of companies in the U.S., one that got hacked and another that don't know they got hacked, right? And I think the first one who said that was someone else, but nonetheless, yeah, that is the sad reality. So yeah. We can't bury our head in the sand, and we just got to be proactive about taking one proactive step to help ourselves not be in that situation.
So say someone gets alerted from iDSEAL, their data has been identified in a dark web marketplace. Does iDSEAL then provide guidance or suggestions for remediation to the user?
Right. So if, let's divide it into two topics. If your identity was stolen, obviously we will help you. We will not help you, but we will take over and make sure that your identity is recovered, right? Whether it's your social security, whether your credit is wrecked completely, whether, you know, like we've had a lot of false claims for unemployment insurance, right? People find unemployment insurance. There are a lot of cases since COVID of claims or fraudulent unemployment insurance. So we'll help you and we'll do the whole thing for you, right? There's the insurance and, you know, up to $1 million coverage with all its insurance disclaimers and all that that's in there. But, you know, they'll cover, they'll help, they'll get you the attorneys you need and the whole lot. Now, if your information is sold in the dark web, people say, well, can you remove it? Man, if I could remove it, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. I'll be too busy, right? But it's impossible. Once it's out in the dark web, can't do anything about it other than you're aware that it's there. And if it's an email, so go change your email. If your passport is out there, maybe you got to go change your passport. You know, so there are things, your driver's license is out there, there are things you can do, right? So we'll tell you what you can do. But unfortunately, you know, I can't make it disappear from the dark web. So that's the truth. If I'll be saying anything else, I'll be lying, you know, so.
Yeah, I think that by providing that guidance to users that are impacted is important.
I agree. And again, you need a little hand holding and telling you what to do. We can do that. You know, you can chat, you can call the office, the customer service, or you can chat and people will help you. People say, oh, sorry, I can't help you with that. You know, people understand. And it was important to me when to set it up in a way that people do take proactive approach, not only in you as a customer, but we as a customer service center, customer care center, that we do give you a little bit more. You feel that it's not a machine answering. It's not just a text your information to the computer and tells me what to tell you. It doesn't work like that. Yeah. We have trained people that we do constant training. We have a person that's only does training constantly to people. And it's constantly up to date on the market and what's happening. We send you alerts, for example, when there are breaches in the market. When we heard of breaches, maybe we don't hear of them all, but whatever we hear, we send you an alert. We tell you, hey, Chris, this has just happened. But don't worry, there's nothing you can do about it, or there's nothing you need to do about it, or here's what you need to do about it, and stuff like that. So we try to be your eyes out there to make sure that you can do your podcast, so you can do whatever you do in life and know at least I got that covered. I got someone at my back covering me, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really the idea.
I do want to shift topics just slightly and talk about a very cool hobby that you have that closely aligns to the concept of this program. So would you mind telling us all about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I added a hobby to my list. I age cocktails in barrels for fun. And funny thing is, I got to share that I've never been drunk. Nothing against it. It's totally fine, you know. And I haven't started drinking until my mid to late 30s. Because, you know, playing soccer all those years, and it was not my thing. So I enjoy crafting, making up my own cocktails, aging them. And I do drink socially. And I enjoy people coming over and tasting it, telling me how they feel about it. So I really enjoy doing that. They consider me the neighborhood's mixologist.
I could use you here, man.
Anytime.
You're looking at, yeah, I'm sure you're busy enough, but you know, if you ever want to come bartend here, I would love to have you. So how did you get interested in that initially? And how did you learn the process on how to do that?
You know, I started drinking here and there, and back in the World Cup of, what was that, 2014 World Cup. I remember I was sitting in San Diego. I went to this bar, someone of buddy of mine, and looking at the menu, there was nothing that I really liked, right? And I said, hey, you know, do you mind making an experiment? He said, no. I said, look, I've become familiar with this thing that's called Saint-Germain. It's an amazing herbal liqueur. It's a very incredible story behind it. But how about if we mix that because with gin? I don't like gin, I said, but let's mix it together. And then we started playing with it, and we started, give you a quick recipe. You get 2-to-1, you know, you get the good gin. I like Nolet gin. I'm not meaning to advertise it, but Nolet is made by the same company. They've been distilling that in Holland, in the Netherlands, for over, I think, 250 years or maybe 300. I don't know. Don't quote me on it. But it's the same family that does Kettle One. They only do two drinks. And Nolet gin has very herbal, also floral smell to it. It's very smooth. So I take two shots of, first of all, I muddle an orange and a lemon. I like it a little bit heavier on the orange. I muddle that. I put two shots of gin, one shot of Saint-Germain. It's a great drink for the summer. That's why I started doing that in the summer. You shake it real well, and you strain it into a martini glass where you let some of the pulp, you don't double strain, just single strain it, so some of the pulp get through. And it is so refreshing. And we just experimented with that and changed it a few times. And I said, you know what? I like old fashions. Let me start doing old fashioned with maple. Right? Let me age maple syrup in an old fashioned. And then I'll age that with the bitters. And then I'll add some Luxardo cherries that are the real thick cherries that are so delicious. Not like the red one, they're black cherries and they're fermented. It's incredible. And add that with some orange peel. And then I start cooking orange and sugar to make a spritz, kind of a spray over the glass, and then I started smoking. Anyway, so it became this thing that now when people come here, they sit and I do cocktails for everyone. It's a lot of fun. So
the excitement in your voice is almost matched.
And I don't do things half, you know what. I don't do. When I do it, I do it all the way, man. So
now, out of all of your craft cocktails, would you say that's your favorite? The old fashioned?
Yeah. Yeah, the old fashioned. Oh, yeah, the old fashioned is one of my favorites. I'm an old fashioned, and I started doing old fashions lately with rum, not whiskeys.
Oh, interesting!
Really delicious. I love to use Zacapa rum, or even Diplomático. You know, decent rums, and you know what? It's a little sweeter, a little smoother. Depends on your preference, man. When you come over, you'll just let me know what you want to try. You know.
Oh, I'm in. Booking my flight after this call.
Exactly.
Do you name the cocktails as well?
Not really. You know, people ask me, why don't you name it? So with that specific cocktail with the gin and the Saint-Germain, I remember I told my buddy there at the bar, he said, what do you want to call it? I said, you know what? You can go to the owner and tell them that you came up with something, and I don't need credit for it. Enjoy it. And he went and they gave it his name. So, yeah.
Man, you're on to something, man. You got to start trademarking these recipes.
I don't know. Maybe I'll do a TikTok thing. You know, I'm not into that, but I don't think I have the look for it. But I'll do a TikTok thing and teach people.
Oh, man. Well, at Barcode, man, I'm going to carve out a special section of the drink menu just for your drinks, man.
I appreciate it. You know, when I retire in a little bit, hopefully, you know, I have a little place I'm going to do in the Caymans. And it's going to be a little bar, and it's going to be open from 4 to 7. It's going to be open now. It's sitting there waiting, right? And you're going to come there and you're going to ask me for the menu. I said, no, man, there's no menu. You're going to drink what I'm going to give you. It's going to be something different every night. I give her a little, maybe I have a special way to make French fries that I like. Incredible. Maybe do that with some hummus that I make myself. Love to cook. And then at 7 p.m., you got to get out because I want to go have some fun. I'm not sitting there all night feeding you.
I love it, man. That's it.
4 to 7, man. That's it.
Closed shop. And you're based out of Charlotte, correct?
Yes. IDCL headquarters are in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah.
Based in the Charlotte region, where would you say is a good bar to go to or a place to unwind after a long day?
Oh, well, depends if you want a quiet place or not quiet. I mean, look, in Charlotte, for example, there's a really place called the Cellar. You come there and it's on the front. It's a really sports bar, but you go down the stairs. It used to be, it's an amazing story. It used to be in the back at the time when booze was illegal, you know, back in the Depression time. It was a pharmacy on the top, and downstairs they have a speakeasy bar. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the who's and who's would come and drink. And it's all bricked and everything. So when you go down to the Cellar, it's an amazing place because it's really what it used to be many years ago, and you can't hear anything upstairs. It's all closed in. So it's one of them incredible places. I'm right now in Charleston, and there's so many places here. And, you know, so you just tell me what town you are, and I'll tell you where to go.
That's awesome. So, Iran, I just heard last call here from my bartender. Do you have time for one more?
Yes, of course.
If you opened a cybersecurity theme bar, what would the name be? And what would your signature drink be called?
It's funny. The name that I thought at the time, but I kind of like Stone and Pebble, but it's like nothing to do with cybersecurity. That was before I decided to do the cyber bar kind, right? It's a good question. I have to think about the name. It's a little different. And I had a few, but I think my signature drink, would probably have to be a maple old fashioned.
Yes.
You know, that'd be my signature drink. And you can have that. I'll let you have that with either whiskey or rum. But if I have to choose, you know, I'll do it probably with a good rye, Whistle Pig, even though people say, why are you wasting Whistle Pig money on an old fashioned? I think I can tell the difference. So I don't care what you say, but. And I think it has to do a lot with the presentation too. You kind of, you know, a quick thing, you know, they said that you drink with your eyes too. What you see is it makes a lot of difference.
So, Iran, where can our listeners find you and connect with you online?
So when you go on the IDCL website, obviously we have a blog there. We just literally launched a new website. Gave it a little facelift, working on the loading everything to the blog. Now the blog is there. You can see videos. You can contact. You can follow us. And, you know, and you have questions. It's kind of like contact us and people ask questions. And we, even on a Facebook page or whatever, people ask and we respond. And that's the best way.
Iran, thanks so much for joining me today, man. Everyone go out and check out IDSEAL at IDSEAL.com. And I look forward to catching up with you, man, and enjoying a craft cocktail with you in person.
Absolutely. Looking forward to having you, doing with you a live podcast and streaming it live from some bar brewery here in Charleston, maybe, get you here. We'll work on that and hopefully we'll get to do that sooner rather than later.
That sounds amazing, man. Listeners, you heard it here first. Be sure to stay tuned for that one.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you, man. Take care and be safe.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a great one. Thanks for having me.
As you know, Barcode is where security and IT professionals hang out after a long day. So get your message front and center to our fans by sponsoring an episode. Learn more at thebarcodepodcast.com/sponsor. Cheers.
Unfortunately, it's time to shut the bar down for this episode. Thanks for stopping in. See you next time. We'll save you a seat. Be sure to check us out at thebarcodepodcast.com.